From Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 8, Manifestation of Brahma, from Vishnu, text number 16, 17, 18, and 19. Text 16 is on the board. Tasyam sachambho ruvakanikayam.
Tasyam sachambho ruvakanikayam.
Avastito lokam apashyamanaha.
Avastito lokam
apashyamanaha. Parikraman vyom nivivrita netra.
Parikraman vyom nivivrita netra.
Chatvari lebe nudisham mukhani.
Chatvari lebe nudisham mukhani.
Tasyam sacham. Tasyam.
Tasyam.
In that.
In that.
Cha.
And.
Ambaha.
Ambaha.
Water.
Water.
Ruhakarnikayam.
Ruhakarnikayam.
World of the lotus.
Avastitaha.
Avastitaha. Being situated.
Being situated.
Lokam.
Lokam.
The world.
The world.
Apashyamanaha.
Apashyamanaha.
Without being able to see.
Without being able to see.
Parikraman.
Parikraman.
Circumambulating.
Vyomni,
in space,
Vibritta
Netraha,
while moving the eyes,
Chatvari,
four,
Lebhe,
achieved,
Anudisham, in terms of direction,
Mukhani,
heads. Translation. Brahma, born out of the lotus flower, could not see the world, although he was situated in the world. He therefore circumambulated all of space, and while moving his eyes in all directions, he achieved four heads in terms of the four directions. Text 17. Lord Brahma, situated in that lotus, could not perfectly understand the creation, the lotus or himself. At the end of the millennium, the air of devastation began to move the water and the lotus in a great circular, waves. Purport. Lord Brahma was perplexed about his creation, the lotus and the world. Even though he tried to understand them for one millennium, which is beyond calculation in solar years of human beings. No one, therefore, can know the mystery of the creation and cosmic manifestation simply by mental speculation. The human being is so limited in his capacity that without the help of the Supreme, he can hardly understand the mystery of the will of the Lord in terms of creation, continuance, and destruction. Text 18. Lord Brahma, in his ignorance, contemplated, who am I that am situated on top of this lotus? Wherefrom has it sprouted? There must be something downwards, and that from which this lotus has grown must be within the water. Purport. The subject matter of the speculations of Brahma in the beginning regarding the creation of the cosmic manifestation is still a subject matter for mental speculators. The most intelligent man is he who tries to find the cause of his personal existence and that of the whole cosmic creation, and thus tries to find the ultimate cause. If his attempt is properly executed with penances and perseverance, it is sure to be crowned with success. In text 19, Lord Brahma, thus contemplating, entered the water through the channel of the stem of the lotus. But in spite of entering the stem and going nearer to the navel of Vishnu, he could not trace out the root. Purport. By dint of one's personal endeavor, one may go nearer to the Lord. But without the Lord's mercy, one cannot reach the ultimate point. Such understanding of the Lord is possible only by devotional service, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, 1855. Bhakti mama vijanati yavan yashchasvi tatvataha. Tomorrow's verse will be text 20. Om Agyananti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Darati Swaparantikam Namasrishta Manumapi Sachiputra Matrasurupam Rupam Tasya Grajam Guru Purim Maturingo stavritim radakunda giribaram ho radhika maravahasam praptoya sapatita kripaya sri gurum tam natosmi. There's a story of a thief who was riding on a train, probably one of these Indian trains. Sometimes when you get on a train in India, you get on with your luggage and a chain and a lock, and you chain things down because in the night time you never know where you stop. They say if you go through Bihar, you be careful. Lock down your baggage, right? Somebody will get on, and when you wake up in the morning, you won't be there. Sometimes it even happens in like second class sleeper or something like that. It happened last year. There was big news in the paper that some thief, he snuck onto the train in one of the stations, probably one of the guards let him in. And because they're all locked, those you pay more to get some more security. Even they have doors sometimes. And then, you know, compartments, four people and they're locked in there. And this thief, he got on and he went through the whole carriage, the whole train. A group of thieves got on. And they stole a huge amount of money, gold, jewelry, and cash. They cleaned up on this train. And then they just jumped off the train. And the people were waking up, you know, because they sleep with the jewelry and everything close to the head. But they're asleep. So they just take the bag. They just took all the bags from people sleeping in second class, first class compartment. They're not expecting so much harassment. So there was a story of a thief, and he was in a carriage. He wasn't in second class. He was in a carriage, and there was quite a few, say it was a three-tier sleeper. So the six people in the carriage, and he's sussing everybody out. Who's got the most money? Who's got the most jewels? Who's got the most wealth in their bags? And this man, he could understand that this guy is a thief, and he had a lot of money with him. He was carrying a large amount of luxury. So he's thinking, what to do? All night I have to stay awake to make sure the thief doesn't take my treasure. And he thought, I'll keep this treasure underneath his bed. So he kept it there. And he slept. Nicely he slept. And the thief, he waited for everyone to go to sleep. And when everybody was sleeping, he started going through the bags, quietly going through everyone's bag, looking for the jewels and the money and the passports or whatever. And he couldn't find anything all night. And he knew that this person had a lot of money. He was following this person. He knew he was a very wealthy person. He had a suitcase full of American dollars. So he was wondering, how can he get that money? The jackpot. And he couldn't find it anywhere. All night he searched and searched. Nobody heard him searching. And then in the morning everybody wakes up and go to the bathroom, come back in, and they're just talking, and the train's coming into the station. And then he says, the thief is really confused. He knew that man had a whole lot of money and he didn't get that money, and he's expert in thieving. So he said to him, he asked the man, the rich man, he said, I know you're a wealthy man. And he said, the rich man said, I know you're a thief. And he said, I know last night you were looking for my money. Last night you were trying to find the treasure and you couldn't find. And he said, where did you hide it? There's so much money, where did you hide it in the train? He said, I put it underneath your bed. Because you'll never look underneath your bed. So close to him, how are you? He won't look underneath his bed. He's looking under everyone else's bed. But he didn't look under his own bed. So this is a little bit like the mental speculators and those who perform penances for many, many years and millennia. They can get very close to Krishna. Prapadasimya avichintya tatve. In Brahma Samhita, it says they can go on for many, many. The Muni Pungavanam can continue to meditate for many, 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 many millions of years and not achieve the tip of the lotus feet of the Lord. But the devotees, they can very easily achieve Krishna by bhakti. Bhakti mama bijananti. That's Prabhupada's quote of this verse in the final purport here. That short purports that we read, that they're all developing this theme of understanding who I am, who is the cause, and how will I get to understand this process? How will I get to understand this fact? And that is the whole purpose of our Krishna consciousness, is to understand who I am. There was a book written by a devotee in America, in Hawaii. He wrote a book called Who Am I? Very good book. I'm not sure if it's in the bookshop here. It's a children's book, but many adults have seen this book and been fascinated by this book. Have you seen this book? You've seen? It's a very beautiful book. It's a picture book. It's like an A4 size, about 20 pages. Every page is a different picture of the same girl. And the devotee who wrote this book, he told me he had conceived this book for 20 years and he couldn't find the right person to shoot. He's a photographer and he's an artist person. And he tried 15 years ago with this young American girl, a devotee girl, and he thought he had the right thing, but she was too conscious, always with the camera in front. She couldn't get every expression different. So he just shelved the project. And then he discovered this young girl one day in the congregation, young South Indian girl. You can see by her picture how she's dressed. She's definitely a South Indian girl. She's about 8 years old. And every single page is a different expression. Like 20 pages, 20 different expressions. Slight different expression on her eyes, different lift of the eyes and cheek and smile and frown or whatever it is that she has to pose for. She did. An amazing book, and it's called Who Am I? And so she's saying, you know, doing the traditional thing, I'm not this hand, I'm not this eye, I'm not this nose, I'm not this tongue, I'm not this skin, I'm not this dress. And each page goes through a different one, I'm not this, I'm not this, I'm not this, and then I'm the soul. And then there's a picture, like the middle page spread, there's a picture of animals and all living entities. Not just animals, some human beings and different jivas of the 8,400,000 species. Not all of them, but quite a lot of them on this page. And they're on a beach, like some kind of tropical beach. Some nice palm trees and nice blue water on the ocean and white sand. And there's a guy on a camel, there's someone on a camel, and there's a cow, and there's a bull, and there's a giraffe, and there's a hippopotamus, and there's some people selling things on the beach. So all different types of living entities. It wouldn't usually be on the beach. Fish. And there's a spirit soul shining out of there. They're all pictures, photographs, not drawings. They're very well put together, photoshopped. And he photoshopped this jiva, the spirit soul bursting out of the heart of these different forms, life forms on the beach. It's a very, very powerful book. We had a PhD come to our office, and she works with us, and she's a Sanskritist, and she saw this book, and she was completely captivated by this book, and she couldn't put it down. This simple book, three words on a page, and she said it's the most powerful book she's ever read, and she's read so many Vedic literatures and so many things, and that book was the most profound book she's ever read, she said. She's studied Bhagavatam inside out and many, many Vedas. And just that simple message, a powerful message, that when I'm not this body, I'm a spirit soul. It's something that we can teach children from the beginning. We're using that book for an extension program in a school in Houston, in America, for 2.5-year-old kids, 2.5 to 4.5-year-old kids. They're in this program, like an after-school program. And somebody's been writing curriculum for that program, and that's the basis of the first 4 weeks of the curriculum. Who am I? Identity. It's part of our curriculum studies. Sanatana Goswami asks the same question as Brahma is asking here. A similar question, Kayami question. He said, who am I and why am I always disturbed by the threefold miseries? Why do they always harass me? Adiyatmika, adibhautika, adidevika miseries. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says to Sanatana Goswami, you know who you are. You're a smart person. You know who you are. And not only that, you're not affected by the threefold miseries. That's his first response to Sanatana. He says, but since you're a sadhu and you're an exalted person, you're asking this question for the benefit of others, I'll answer the question. So his answer is famous Jivere Sura Bohaya, Nityara Krishna Das. That you want to know who you are, you're a servant of Krishna. And you're Jivere Tatashta Shakti, Veda Abeda Prakash. That you belong to the marginal potency. You're a servant of Krishna and you belong to the marginal potency of God, of Krishna's energies, in between matter and spirit. And you're simultaneously one with Krishna and different. You have the same qualities of Krishna, but you're quantitatively different. And pretty much that's the essence of our philosophy, of our spiritual philosophy. Spirituality. What is spirituality? What is spirituality in the curriculum? What is spirituality in the yoga studio? What is spirituality? It's a big question. The other day I was walking through Albert Park, and there's some funny streets at the back here. They're not on a grid. They kind of merge into each other, and they're on angles, like 45-degree angle and a funny. And one of those corners, I was looking at this house, and the house is on a corner like this. Funny house. And I was just thinking, it's a funny house. Wonder if it's good vastu. It doesn't look like a vastu to me. So I walked past the house and there was someone in the garden. I didn't see him. And he said something to me. And I was somewhere else, so many miles away. And he said something to me and I stopped. And then I went up to him and he was pulling down a poster, a banner for, he was supporting the local school's fate. So he's taking it down. I said, oh, how was the fate? How was your day today? And he said they had a very successful Albert Park's primary school fate. And I said, that's good, because I know how important it is to raise funds for schools. So we had a chat, and he told me the history of his house and his family and how they've been there since 1836. And it was quite an interesting discussion I had with this man and his mother, his mother's mother. And anyway, he turned out to be a very philosophical person into faith. And he said to me, he was listening to a talkback program, ABC talkback program. And there they had invited one of the biggest atheists professors in the university from Melbourne. And he was defending atheism, saying how God is dead, there's no such thing as God, it's all sentimental. It's a psychological prop. You don't need religion. And he had his whole philosophy. That was one side. And the other side was another professor, PhD, from the University of Melbourne. Both university professors, an atheist and a theist. And one was a Christian scientist and one is this atheist. So this Christian scientist is a respectable person. He's the head of a big department at the university. But he believes in God. And they were having this debate. And of course the debate wasn't getting anywhere. After 1 hour, nobody's any better off. Just people, just these smart guys trying to defeat each other on how to establish the validity of a truth claim. It's all about word jugglery, and it's all about being smarter than the other guy, like lawyers in a courtroom or something like that. So at the end he said, all right then, the person who was arguing for the existence of God, the atheist, the theist, he said to the atheist, "How do you answer the question, why are you here? Why did you come to this world?" And the atheist said, "That is a stupid question. Why you ask that question? There's no sense in that question. There's no validity in that question. There's no purpose for that question. That proves that you're a stupid guy. If you ask that question, you're stupid." He said, "We can tell how we came here through evolutionary theory and DNA. We can explain everything. We can explain all that. But the why we came here is a useless question. No intelligent person will waste their time contemplating, trying to answer that question. Why we came here." And so the theist just smiled and he said, "Whatever." I don't know what he said, but this person was relating that to me. And sharing his understanding of spirituality. You know, he says many years ago in the local primary school, Albert Park Primary School, he was on the board of the school. He's quite an active local guy. He was on the board of the school. And the question came up to, could we teach religion in the school? Because there's an act in 1988 act, and he was telling me all these technical details. There's an act, education act that says you can teach religion in schools in Victoria, in Australia. And so using this act, he was trying to push his agenda because he's a theist. He's not necessarily a fanatic guy. He just wants that children be exposed to God consciousness. He's a good person, actually, a very good person. And so the board member said, "What is spirituality?" And nobody could answer. What is spirituality? What is spiritualism? Why would we want to teach spirituality? What is it? And he said he couldn't even really answer it. When they asked him, "What is spirituality all about?" he couldn't answer it. And when you ask someone, you know, there's a famous alternative education system called Steiner, Waldorf School. And you ask the Steiner people, "What is spirituality?" And then they say, it's different for everybody. It's a feeling that you get. It's a light, a lamp. It's a nice feeling. They can't define spirituality. Impossible. The whole thing is about spirituality and movement and eurythmics, but they can't explain what it is. They can't define what it is at the end of the day when they have to define it. But we have this wealth of explanation. Bhagavatam is an explanation or a definition or a description of spirituality, of what it means to be spiritual. Srila Prabhupada quotes Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He translates Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary on this verse, Jivira Surupahoi Nitira Krishnadas, in his commentary in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And there he says that first thing is that Sanatan, you're not this material body. You're different to the gross body and the subtle body, the mind and intelligence. You're neither the gross nor the subtle body. And he says you're something apart and parcel. Very important point, this coin of phrase, call it a collocation. Special Prabhupada, I think Prabhupada, or perhaps Bhaktivinoda Thakur, but definitely within our tradition, this is a very important term, coin of phrase, part and parcel of Krishna. So Prabhupada's translation of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary is that you're not this material body, you're not gross, you're not subtle body, you're a spirit soul. That's what you are. You're spiritual. And as a spirit soul, you're part and parcel of the big soul, of Krishna. You're spirit and you're part and parcel of Krishna. And then he says that you are tatashta. You're in between. There is two worlds. There's a material world and a spiritual world. And you have a relationship with both. You relate with the material world and you relate with the spiritual world. Therefore, you're in between both, or tatashta. So you have choice. And he's gave an example of that difference, that Tathashta. Just like there is the difference between the original source of the fire and the spark of the fire, or the sunshine and the sun particle, two examples of Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives, to help us understand the qualitative difference between the jiva and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And for us, that's spirituality. If someone says, what is spiritual? What is spiritualism? It means we are an eternal spirit soul. What is a spirit soul? A spirit soul is a servant of the Supreme Soul. We are part and parcel. We are qualitatively one with the Supreme Soul and quantitatively different from the Supreme Soul. And therefore we have activity to perform. We say that Krishna consciousness is not an event. Krishna consciousness is a process. One of my friends in Mumbai, he's a counselor for different devotees. And he says to his counselees, he's got many devotees he's looking after. He says to them, you know, when they experience some hardship or some difficulty or some setback and they want to throw their beads out and give it up like this. So he says to them, challenge them in a very strong way. Are you in this for the process, or are you this thing, Krishna consciousness, as an event? Something to enjoy. You want to get the experience of the one show, or you want to be in it for good? Is it your life? Is it your life choice, Krishna consciousness? And they always say, yes, Prabhuji, it's a process. But it is. We have to be convinced that it's a process. Krishna consciousness is not an event. There's many events, for sure, in our devotional lives, but we have to make the most important thing is the focus on the process. And Lord Brahma, he was successful because of his focus on the process, not on the event. If it was the event, he would have given up. He spent a whole millennium trying to work it out. He didn't give it up. So Prabhupada says, if his attempt is properly executed, if our attempt is properly executed with penances and perseverance, we're sure to be crowned with success. Penances and perseverance. Tapo divyam putra kayena sattvam. How to achieve that satisfaction or the bliss or connection with our eternal constitutional position is to engage in some voluntary hardship for God. To do something as a sacrifice, a yajna, to acknowledge that there's a supreme being and to take a subordinate position and make an arpanam, make an offering back to the God, to Krishna, as something that is in gratitude. We're giving rather than taking. We give because we received. We're not receiving and then giving. We're not asking for God to give. We're giving because we've received. It's a different mentality. That's the yajna mentality. Idam Krishna, idam namama. Everything is for Krishna. It's not for me. We got it all from Krishna, so we're giving back in recognition and gratitude. Thank you, God. Thank you, Krishna. They take this as an offering. That means yajna. That is sacrifice. And that's a penance. For sure, it's a penance. But it's something that when we execute, we get a deeper realization and an understanding of our position. Otherwise, we have a tendency to place ourselves in the enjoying position. That this facility is provided for my benefit, for my satisfaction. It's provided because I'm so successful, or I'm so good, or I'm so intelligent, or I'm so skillful, or crafty, or whatever. I got this position, so it's for my benefit. I worked hard for it, and I'm going to enjoy it. But when we work hard for something and receive something, we offer it to Krishna or offer it to the Vaishnavas, we become purified. Our false identity becomes cleansed and we start to understand that I'm a spirit soul. I'll just finish off with a pastime from the Chaitanya Charitamrita that I was reading this morning. And I was reading for a different purpose, but Krishna gave me some connect here with this purport. We're in the process of developing a curriculum for children. And I was asked on the weekend to write a story based on the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the story of Lord Chaitanya cleanses the Gundicha temple. And I have to simplify this for a three-year-old kid. I have to read the story many times. To simplify something for a three-year-old, you have to know the story pretty well. Otherwise, you won't get the message across. It'll come across in a complicated way, a complex way. That's why Srila Prabhupada was such a master. Prabhupada's not referred to, in our tradition, we don't call him an expert. We call Prabhupada a master. And there's a difference between a master and an expert. Expert is somebody at the university or in the news when you tune into the Channel 7 news or whatever news you have here in Melbourne. Probably you never watch the news, but they used to have these Channel 7 news, and they would say there's some controversy, and they would switch over to the experts. Go to the experts at the Weather Bureau or to the experts at the Parliament House or someone at the university or someone doing some research somewhere. So reference to some expert. So the expert speaks and it's convincing. And it must be true because the experts have said that and they've spent their last 20, 30 years studying this phenomenon, so they're experts. And they speak in a way that very few people can understand, so they're experts. They have a vocabulary and a language that is perplexing. They must be very intelligent. They don't know what they're talking about either. But they cover it up because they've got some nice language. So they're experts. Srila Prabhupada is a master because he took that complicated language of the Veda, the complicated language of the Sanskrit language, and the complicated concepts, esoteric concepts, and he was able to distill them in such a way that he made them accessible to anybody. He reproduced this Vedic culture in an accessible way. That is a master. A master wants to give to his students, to his disciples, to his followers, so they understand. Not so that they're confused and that they worship him because he's such a great person, he's got such a vast vocabulary. But the master wants his disciples to understand. So he's the master at who he's the at who's all at the feet of who everybody surrenders, Srila Prabhupada. At whose feet all masters surrender. That was one of the posters in the 70s. There's a cafe, it's still there, I think. Tiamos in Carlton. Near the university. There's many cafes in that block along Lygon Street. So, in the old days there weren't so many Italian restaurants there. Now it's all restaurants. But there was cafes and a wine bar and a few other things like that. So this cafe at Tiamo's, it had many posters on the wall, like wallpaper posters. And one of them was from the Rath Yatra in 1974. I'm not sure if it's still there, but it was there during the 80s when we were at university. And that used to fascinate me, that poster. We used to sit there and drink coffee underneath this poster. And see, there's devotees pulling this cart, Rath cart. And there's another poster, famous poster, and it's Prabhupada. And they're advertising Prabhupada's visit to Melbourne. And Prabhupada was speaking at the Melbourne Town Hall. And that was Srila Prabhupada. Here's the Prabhupada speaking. And 2,000 people came, so it was a very good campaign. Very good marketing campaign. And they said, at whose feet all masters sit? Petra Srila Prabhupada preaching very strongly. So he's a great master. So in this pastime, the Gundicha temple pastime, at the beginning of it, the first section, is the pastime of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Lord Nityananda. Their approach, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to request that
he gave darshan, special darshan, to the king of Orissa, whose office, whose headquarters was in Cuttack. And they knew this wouldn't be very pleasing for Lord Chaitanya. He's a sannyasi, and he shouldn't meet with the king, with the opulent person like the king. So Lord Chaitanya said, what can I do? If I go to Cuttack, the general people will laugh and criticize that the sannyasi is going to enjoy in the palace. You shouldn't go there. And say, what to speak of the general people? Dhammadhar Pandit will chastise me. And then he said, only if Dhammadhar Pandit agrees, then I can go to see King Prataparudra. And Dhammadhar Pandit was there in the assembly. And he said, not like that. He said, you're the supreme independent person. Whatever you say will happen. We know that. That you're not conditioned by any of the mundane rules and regulations of the sannyas dharma or of the material world. So you're supremely independent. And then Lord Chaitanya is still saying, well, whatever you say to his disciples, to his followers, I'll do, but I don't want to disturb my sannyas ashram. So they were thinking, how can King Prataparudra wants to leave his body, he wants to give up his kingdom. And they could see his sincerity in Prataparudra Maharaj's request, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Lord Nityananda. And they saw he was crying, for he wants to take the lotus feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and place them on his chest, on his heart. And that will be the success of his life. And Lord Chaitanya wasn't going to... He was softened. It said when he heard of the devotion of the king, Mahaprabhu's heart softened. But he wasn't going to agree. So they came up with a... You can study this pastime. There's many different levels of approaches until finally there's the big union in the garden, Jagannath Ballabha Gardens. But first solution was to bring the cloth, to offer some tadiyanam of Lord Chaitanya, to find the cloth and that the king could worship the cloth and that would connect him with the Supreme Lord. Of course, that's not completely successful. And then Ramananda Roy came back into Puri. And he met with King Prataparudra because he's part of his government. And he was asking to be released from his duties. And he released him with double pay. He released him because he's a servant of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But he expressed his affection and his love for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the king. And Ramananda Roy, who is a great exalted devotee, he could see that this king was very, very affected and very genuinely wanted to be a part of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. And he wanted to renounce his kingdom and wear an ivory earring as a sign of his renunciation, to give up his responsibilities. So Ramananda Roy was petitioned to approach Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. After Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and his team had been there, Ramananda Roy approached him. And we know from Lord Chaitanya's tour of South India that he was very closely, intimately connected now with Ramananda Roy and very impressed by his bhakti, his devotion, his knowledge. And he could be swayed by Ramananda Roy. So Ramananda Roy, he started to glorify Prataparudra without asking any question. And here, Prabhupada explains that this is diplomacy, transcendental diplomacy. Because Ramananda Roy worked for the king. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, many of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's intimate associates were worldly people and they were expert in diplomacy. Raghunath Das Goswami, Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Ramananda Roy. And he said they were very, very expert in creating a situation that would work favorably for them because their understanding of how to deal with people, Prabhupada says. They could deal with people, they could influence the way things go. So Ramananda Roy was using his subtle diplomatic skills, communication skills. And he just starts glorifying this king. He's never seen anybody with so much bhakti, with so much affection, with so much conviction in spiritual life and so detached from the worldly pleasures and opulences as somebody who has them all but completely detached. And he's glorifying this king. And Lord Chaitanya is hearing more and more of these glories of this king. Everybody, his intimate associates, are glorifying Prataparudra. So again, his heart's melting, and he wants to meet this king, but he can't meet the king. It'll disturb his ashram. So they agree now that his son, the king should send his son to Mahaprabhu, because in the Vedic scriptures it said the son is a representative of the father. So then the son comes, and the son is a young prince, and his features exactly resemble Krishna. His bodily features, his color, his complexion, his hair, everything about him resembles Krishna. And he was in that same youthful Navayovanam period of Krishna. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very enthralled by this prince, and he embraced him. And then the prince went home and he told his father about his exchange. And the prince became an exalted personality, a very intimate associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu after that meeting and subsequent meetings. So in this description of Pratapuja Maharaja's affection for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and how he approached the Lord, we learn many things. One of the most important things we learn from it is that we have to approach Krishna in a humble state of mind. That we don't demand, I'm the king here, you get here now, I'm the king of this country, you used to come here and I want to see you, so it's time for you to come here and we can see you. He knew that wouldn't work. And so he didn't do that. So with humility, he was successful. Eventually he gets to massage the Lord's feet and take those feet and place them on his heart. He's successful in his endeavor through his penances and perseverance. He persevered and finally he got a window of opportunity, and he grasped that. He took that opportunity to connect with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's lotus feet. So that humility was very important, and to give up our false designations, to give up our false dress, this false identity, who I am. I'm a spirit soul. And when Pratapuja Maharaj, when he discarded his royal dress and his paraphernalia and his entourage, and he approaches the Lord in simple dress and his gamsha, you can say, chada, and he recites beautiful verses of glorification of Krishna, then he's connected fully with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And the other thing we learn from this pastime is the importance of the Vaishnavas, that we don't have direct access to Krishna. And we can't demand Krishna for anything. And we don't have the direct access to Krishna. We have to go through Krishna's devotees. We approach Krishna through, that is a process. Part of the process is that we go through the devotee. In the purport of Bhakti Mama Bijananti verse, Yavanyaschatmitattvata, Prabhupada says that the devotee will approach Krishna, will achieve Krishna consciousness, will enter into the kingdom of God by the mercy of the spiritual master and the process. One has to be engaged in Krishna consciousness. And to engage in Krishna consciousness, we need a guide. We need a spiritual teacher. We need somebody who understands the process. Not just an event organizer, but someone who understands the process. Somebody who can connect us continually with this process. That will inspire us to persevere when the going gets tough, when we become frustrated, when things dry up sometimes, or when things don't go our way. And that happens in every walk of life. Things go haywire sometimes. But when that happens, we have the association of devotees, we have the instructions of our seniors to inspire us and to prod us and to encourage us and to nurture us, to nurture our bhakti lata so that it grows strong and can achieve the ultimate goal. So the devotee is very important. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Lord Nityananda, Ramananda Roy, that was the gateway for Pratapuja Maharaj to be successful. Otherwise he doesn't have access to the Supreme Lord. We take the access through the Vaishnavas, through the association of devotees. As Prabhupada says in that purport, the friendship with the devotees give the contribution of Krishna consciousness. That's what he says in that wonderful purport in the 10th canto of Bhagavatam Trinavrata, that one of the benefits I mentioned the other day, one of the benefits of hearing Krishna Katha, and there are many benefits, many side benefits, one of the benefits is that we get friendship with devotees. We hear about Krishna together and we develop friendship. And that friendship gives the contribution of Krishna consciousness. We get attachment for Krishna and we get devotional service and friendship. Attachment for Krishna. And that's that devotional service which enables us to see or to perceive and to connect with who we are. Any questions or comments? Yes, Rob. It must be multi-dimensional universes.
So that he could have a head for every direction.
No. Yeah, I was thinking that also when I read this. That they've simplified this chatvadi so that we can... in the Chaitanya Charitamrita there's a lila where Lord Brahma is summoned and he sees many multi-headed Brahmas with hundreds of heads and thousands of heads. But in the description, it's just saying that he was looking in all the directions. So he got a head for each of the major directions. Of course, there's sometimes said that there's 10 directions, or there are 8 directions. But there are 4 main directions. So he got a head for each of the main directions. And he was able to, with each of those heads, maybe sometimes people say there are different Veda for each head, or there's different things for... different processes for different heads of Lord Brahma. But all of those heads came up with this Brahma Samhita and glorification that Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yes. Text 18.
Sorry, 19. Into the water. Mm-hmm. So just going down the lotus step. So was that the water of devastation? Because otherwise, in the lotus, then wouldn't be in water. It's just in space.
The water is the water inside the stem, the water of devastation. I'm not sure what it's referring to. All of the intricate details of this. Everything's in the stem. For sure. I'm not sure what the water is. I'm sure it's at the end of the millennium the air of devastation began to move the water and the lotus in great circular waves. The air of devastation. So, I'm sure there's the element of water of devastation is connected with that era of devastation. Yeah. Must be. I'll connect. But I think it's important for this pastime, for this in the Srimad Bhagavatam, is to focus on what Prabhupada extracts from the pastime and not to get too concerned about details. Because the pastime has a purpose, and Prabhupada's extracting the purpose What is the principle here? The principle is perseverance. The principle is patience. The principle is to understand our identity, to ask the right questions. Who am I? This is the most important part of this section to understand. And then as we mature, as we advance, Krishna will reveal many different aspects of the pastimes, dimensions of the pastimes. But first we have to understand the spirit of the pastime. I think that's the most important lesson for us in Bhagavatam, always, as to what is the story teaching us? And we'll find out what it's teaching us through the purports. Anything else? Gantaraj Shumar Bhagavatam Ki Jai Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai Gautam. Thank you.